Hey everyone, just a couple quick notes about this particular episode before I fly out this door to go to work. One, this is recorded at Convergence, if the title didn't already give that away. It was a really good panel on Kaiju. David Annandale, one of our co-hosts, was on it, and he obviously really belonged there because it was a lot of fun for him. We had a blast actually recording this. The show notes will include links to the other panelists, Dave and Melissa. If you could go check out their stuff, that would be really cool. We, you know, show them a little bit of support. So do go check that out at skiffingfanny.com. And the other thing is that this particular room didn't have the best acoustics. I've done the best I could basically do to make the audio good. It's not horrible audio. It just means that some of the levels aren't quite equal, and that just has to do with the fact that where I placed the mic, it captured David and I a lot better because we happen to be sitting in the middle, and so folks that were on the far ends didn't get in as well, so their levels are just slightly off. But I think the audio is fine. You can even catch the audience questions, which was really cool. I didn't think that my thing could have picked that up, so that's really great. We had a lot of fun with this, and I do hope you enjoy it. So on that note, I'm going to shut up and let you all get to the episode. Bye!
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Godzilla vs. Kaiju, and the first panel slot of the convention. You can start with the right here.
Why don't you start down the end? Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Dave Margosian. Been coming to Convergence for a long time. Started volunteering, you know, quite a few years back. I just love being up here because I'm a ham. And I volunteered for this panel because I've always been kind of a big Godzilla fan, no pun intended. I watched, when I was a kid growing up in Racine, Wisconsin, I watched all the Godzilla shows that they would have on Saturday afternoon on Channel 18. So, thank you. One person. He's not even from the area. He just clapped to make him feel better.
I'm from Milwaukee, and I remember watching those same shows.
Oh, excellent.
Hi, I'm Sean Duke. I am a member of the Skiffy and Fanty Show podcast, which is, I guess, currently you've been nominated, which is pretty cool. Clapping. So, I'm on this panel, I think, largely because it's David's fault. We've currently done a couple episodes on the Skiffy and Fanty Show on Kaiju, specifically the original Godzilla and the current Godzilla, which I suspect we're going to have some words to exchange on that. So, a little worrisome. And hopefully we'll talk a little bit about Pacific Rim. But, yeah. Oh, good.
I think that's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
Inevitable.
Excellent.
I'm David Annandale. I'm also on the Skipping Fanty Show, and I write Warhammer 40,000 fiction. And I've been a Godzilla fan from almost day one of my life. My very first paid publication was a history of Godzilla comic books and Amazing Heroes. So it's been a and Godzilla casts a long shadow over everything that I write, directly or indirectly. And when it came to this film, one way or another, I'd been waiting for this movie for over 30 years. So I was very eager to be on this panel.
And my name is Melissa Kirscher. I am on a couple of podcasts, to put it lightly. One of them is Xanadu Cinema Pleasure Dome, where two drunk women talk about movies. And the other one, another one being A Real Education, where we talk about classic films in a fun way. So I've also been a Godzilla fan for a long time. You know, starting my introduction to kaiju was through Mystery Science Theater 3000 when it was first on Channel 23, and you know, started with Gamera, the lesser of the two, and then you know, proceeding to the better Godzilla films. That's true. A Rocket Turtle, I can give a lot of points for. That
he's
is
made of turtle meat.
He is made of turtle meat. Yes, he loves Gamera. But we are here to talk about Godzilla. So, we're going to start with a new film. First of all, let's start out. What did each of you think of the new movie? Anyone?
I was very surprised by it. At first, I was not interested in seeing it because, you know, the shadow of the Matthew Broderick film.
That's a long shadow.
It just got crushed, you know. And a lot of the videos that I've been seeing come out since then just sort of, it didn't really do it for me. But we decided we were going to go anyways. And I was surprised by it. I thought it was much better than it was going to be. I had a good time, and that's basically what I go to movies for, is to have a good time. I'm not going to sit there and pick it apart unless it's really terrible. But, yeah, that's what I thought.
I liked it. I found it a really enjoyable experience. I think visually, I mean, most people would agree, if you've seen it, it's gorgeous, and Godzilla is an amazing monster. And the scenes with battle were just, I thought, particularly exceptional. I did miss some of the tone from the original Godzilla, by which I mean the non-Americanized version, where they don't have some random guy giving a talk in English. And I know that's something that David and I maybe... He'll have a very different opinion on where Godzilla rests within the series, but I did overall enjoy it. I found it a really exciting experience, and it was great for me because I don't fondly remember the other film, which shall not be named. I don't fondly remember it for a lot of reasons, mostly because I was a teenager and it's terrible. But this would be my first real Godzilla theater experience, and it was one that I found really illuminating to sort of see that creature and actually root for this giant lizard on screen, especially when he's doing great things like ripping off faces. So, good for him.
Well, my first theatrical experience of Godzilla film was, as it was then called, Godzilla versus the Thing. And I do see the new Godzilla as being, even though the initial trailers made it seem like it was a return to the 1954 film, the actual film itself blends elements of that with the later films from the 60s, kind of a love letter to those. And so it took a little bit of... I know I'd gone in expecting one thing and got something a little bit different, which took some adjusting. So, but my first experience of the film, I quite liked it. Then I saw it again and loved it the second time around. There was all sorts of stuff that I had missed the first time. Scenes early on that I... that really I could only connect in retrospect, saying, oh, this is doing this, and there was a kind of, it was almost a revelatory experience the second time around. I very much enjoyed it then.
And for me, I really enjoyed the new film too. I felt that, echoing some of the opinions earlier, the battle scenes, anything involving the monsters was just perfect. Absolutely pitch perfect. Just wonderful. The human stuff was kind of like, okay, waiting through the human stuff till we get to the monsters. And unfortunately, you know, you've got kind of a bland cast, you know, Bryan Cranston notwithstanding, you know, and of course he's gone fairly early. So, you know, kind of boilerplate human drama stuff that I didn't particularly care for. And I feel like if the script got another pass to kind of raise the level of the human parts to be more entertaining, I think we would have had another Jaws on our hands, like something that was just solidly entertaining from end to end. Whereas we got, you know, kind of so-so human drama stuff and the really great monster stuff. So that was my take on it.
If I can, the reason that the humans seem so bland is so that when you actually get to the monster part, that much better.
I can definitely see that. I do remember reading I think David Ehrlich wrote an article online saying that Godzilla is the first post-human blockbuster, which is a really it's a really great article, but describing how the human parts actually kind of fit in that they are illustrating just how useless humans are in this situation. they might as well be ants.
That's actually one of the things that I that was really driven home for me on the second viewing was that the very first real shot we get of humans more than one of our cast members as we fly over the mine, and they look like maggots crawling up and down the cliffs, and then we get shot after shot like that all the way through the film of humans reduced to insects. And what the what really for me places this film in the tradition of the kaiju film as opposed to the American tradition of giant monster films, so King Kong, Beast from 20,000 Fathoms, It Came from Beneath the Sea, and so forth, is the reduction of human agency. That we can't do anything. In the American tradition, there will be a means of getting rid of the monster. But the military will be successful. In the kaiju tradition, they won't be. Right. Or there'll be some terrible cost associated, as in the oxygen destroyer. But here, having the humans ultimately futile, right? We have the almost stereotypically traditional square-jawed action hero, whose entire narrative arc in the film is futility. He fails at everything. He can't even get home. His special job is
his kid with his parents.
Yeah, well, yes. Okay.
One minor success. Yeah.
But it was kind of, by the wayside.
But he doesn't even get thanked for it.
And his special job, defusing bombs, he doesn't get to do that. The only thing he finally tries to do is push forward on a boat, and even that doesn't work. Right? He has to have his ass saved by Godzilla there. So that character who would normally be triumphant does nothing really. Virtually nothing. Was that?
He destroys the nest.
He destroys the nest, which wouldn't have been there in the first place if the human plan hadn't been acted like. The human plan just made things exponentially worse, right? So that's right. He gets to minimize the damage, right? Which is about as far as we get, as opposed to developing a specialized torpedo which takes out the octopus, or the radioactive isotope which kills the beast, or fly the biplane which takes down Kong,
or the oxygen weapon in the original Godzilla,
right? Which is the one, and that is presented in such a different way. So,
right.
So we have the post-human blockbuster. Humans reduced to futility, and ultimately, it becomes about the monsters.
So the humans in this movie are sort of like Indiana Jones and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
If they weren't in it, it wouldn't matter. It would come out the same. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I think for me was not quite alarming, but I went into the Godzilla movie expecting almost from the trailers that I was going to get kind of like a reboot. Like, this is a new Godzilla, and like, here we go. Like, that brilliant scene where you see them halo gliding, or whatever they call that, where they're just dropping down into just disaster zone. They have no idea what's happening. We know it's Godzilla because the movie's called Godzilla. So, we're smart enough to figure that out. For some reason, they're not. Sorry. Ruined the movie for you guys. Yeah. But that scene is quite brilliant, and it's played off with the score and everything. And so the sense that trailer gave me was that this is going to be like the original Godzilla, that they're not going to know what's happening. They're flying in here blind, and they're going to find a giant friggin' lizard, and it's just going to tear everything up, and they're going to try everything they can to stop it, and then it's going to be some miraculous thing like Godzilla trips and get a, stubbed toe or something, right? But what we get is a very different kind of film, like as David is suggesting, where the humans are actually, like, quite honestly, the humans are dumb in this movie. I mean, I'm amazed that this is the actual U.S. military, because they just, like, why would you put a nuke on a train? Like, we spent 40 years fighting the Russians and building all these intercontinental ballistic missiles. Why wouldn't we just shoot them? But we decided to put it on a train. because that's the best way to transport nukes when you know that you have monsters that can detect nuclear waste.
And they're not even covered.
Right. They're not covered, they're not protected. The random military guy can sort of get a part of the group by just saying, hey, I know how to defuse bombs, and nobody seems to check. Right?
And then the helicopter.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
There's a question.
He's calling on the radio before the tunnel, like if it's clear, and then they keep hearing back all the fighting and such, and he just keeps asking back, is it clear? Oh, we better go check it out.
And they hear gunfire, and he's like, well, it might still be clear. Let's go.
And then they got on the train because they wanted to lure the beast to the coast. It would be more safe for them to blow them up.
Yeah, you're right. That they do that, but it seems like they've got this plan in action for like hours. They're like following these creatures for hours, and it can't take that long to just shoot off a missile. Or at least maybe they could have put it in a bunch of really fast flying planes and moved it away from San Francisco and forced them to follow. But I think that's kind of the point that David was making, that the humans are just phenomenally bad at what they do, and that's partly
well,
kind of what
we're told
the
plan is dumb in the first place, right? Yeah. The one character who knows what's going on says, no, this is a terrible idea. And
that's true.
It's demonstrated to be a terrible idea.
Yeah. And there's so many hands.
Yeah, like, my thing is, why lead them to a major city like that? Why not just lead them into like the middle of the ocean?
Well, that's what they were trying to do.
But it's like all going towards this major politics area.
You'd think logistically they would have figured out they couldn't get the bomb there quick enough by train, but again, they're just not very good. Yeah.
People have opinions about it.
Yeah, boy. Bring it.
Why did they just leave it to Death Valley?
Did any of you find it frustrating that so much of it was around the military? Just like, if you watch the old films, you know the military is going to fail. And all of it was like in one basket.
Well, so really, this was very true to the Godzilla films of Toho.
And it, at least it felt to me like, oh, sorry. I mean, it is a break from the Hollywood tradition of giant monsters, right? What we have seen in the Japanese films over and over again is exactly what you described. But in the American monster film, the only other one that does something different is Cloverfield, right? The Roland Emmerich Godzilla film is very much in fact, it's basically a remake of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. It's much closer to that than to Godzilla. And it follows the traditional element. Even if the military blows up more than the monster does, they do finally just take it out with missiles. So there is that sense of agency and power. Whereas I think in some ways since every monster film is going to be in dialogue with the culture that produces it, this is giving something new to North American, but specifically to the American audience. Look, here's what would normally play out, but no, it's not going to work. It's going to be a disaster from start to finish, right? Which is what the Japanese army experiences in the very first film, and essentially re-experiences over and over and over again. But they're coming from a culture that had already been on the business end of the atomic bomb.
Gordon.
In defense of the human beings in the film, we have to remember that they are limited by their ability to never hear or see anything that is directly off screen. So when you look up and there is a 40-story monster towering over you, and it had to have come into your area within the last minute or so, You've got to start checking your hearing.
Especially when they're doing a close-up on your face.
I would just say that this was probably one of the things that did frustrate me. Is like, well, I understand what David and you and I disagree, and you'll kill me later, but that's okay. One of the things that I did find super frustrating was that in the original Godzilla, the Japanese military, they do the best they can. They really do. They get tanks and they shoot missiles. Granted, they've got the weird flying planes that don't quite, it doesn't make sense. But they try their hardest. They really do, and they're just outmatched. They cannot kill him. They need to use this super weapon to do it. And of course, that has big moral and ethical implications, which is part of the sort of the concern for the human characters. But in this one, the military just does things that don't make sense. Like, they put people on buildings to shoot at Godzilla with, you know, just like an M16 rifle, knowing after doing that a couple times it doesn't work. So they need to use bigger weapons, and not to toot the American horn, but we've got big weapons. Right? We've got rail guns. We've got all this. I feel like if we're going to see the humans fail, they need to be at their best, so that Godzilla is really raised as this creature that, like, he literally is just a natural force, as Serizawa even says in this version of the film. Right? He says that, you know, this is just nature taking its course. We should just let the monsters fight because you can't stop it. Well, we need to see that, I think, is what was for me. Yeah.
Although I'm thinking it's interesting that this Godzilla movie, at least in terms of American film, also takes the tactic of Godzilla's an environment. Godzilla's not necessarily even a monster. It's like a zombie movie in that you are just watching aftermath of all of this disaster as it's moving through.
Yeah. I also think that you'd probably get more criticism from people in general if the military did their best like they would normally do and fail than if they were less accurate about things like this.
Probably true. Yeah.
In the scripture.
Well, an interesting thing about fighting Pluto's,
right.
To repeat the question, the EMP that the Mutos can generate limits what they can do, what the humans can do.
Yeah. Well, it is a way of in some ways reducing the technology of the. We see the. It seems to me the military reduced to a kind of 1954 status, right? That all of a sudden they're moving things on trains. All of the big toys don't work anymore.
Yeah, it's like you kind of have to nerf the modern military in order to make Godzilla movie happen.
True, but at the same time, I feel like you could really have. I don't think the U.S. military can kill Godzilla. Like,
no, I mean, Cloverfield would be an example.
Yeah, I mean, he would be this big monstrous thing that we would throw nukes at, and then like next week he'd show up and be like, "Sorry, you missed." Right?
I mean, lovely snack.
But I mean, even in the film, we see that brilliant scene where you see the sort of back of Godzilla come up out of the water, and then you see a nuke go off, and you find out that's what the hydrogen bomb tests were all about, right? Well, I don't think it ever is made clear whether they actually succeeded.
It is mentioned that it didn't work.
And it didn't work.
And that's why Serizawa was saying, this is a stupid plan. It didn't work in 54. It's not going to work now. Yes. And, you know, you can almost hear his eyes rolling as he hears that.
Seriously?
Well, the question at that point, I think, becomes one of whether or not the American military would even want to be part of the movie if you're going to show them as being, yes, we do have these big toys, yes, we use them and they didn't work, then you come against some probably policies to say we don't want to see any sort of weakness on film.
Except human error?
Well, I think we can all agree that the American military has done stupid things in the past. So.
Well, true, but there might be an aspect there of, I don't know if the U.S. military was actually involved, that they like let them take pictures of their planes flying around in circles or something. Mm. But there may be an aspect there that the military is like, well, if you're going to have us fail, then have us fail because people suck. Right? Not because our weapons didn't work, but because, like, you know, when we sent a little tank after him, like, the guy turned the wrong direction. Right? I mean, there could be an aspect of that just to sort of to keep that relationship, you know, nice. But I don't know if that's true. I don't know how involved the military actually was in this particular film.
On a happy note, I will note that there were some points of personality that Godzilla had that harkened back to the original Toho movies that I found endearing or at least appealing enough. I mean, granted, he didn't do the Godzilla shuffle. You could see him winking at the screen.
Yeah, the facial expressions.
Media didn't show up. We can be happy about that.
The face, yeah. The facial expressions were gorgeous. I mean, I'm sure that's part of what you're talking about. I mean, there's like a brilliant moment when he gets smacked in the face by one of the Mutos, and he like turns and he just gets this look of disdain on his face, and it's the most emotion in the entire film. And it comes from the guy who's a lizard, and it's amazing. It's beautiful work. They did a brilliant job making him into a character, even though he never talks. Well, as far as we know, I mean, maybe when he's roaring, it's language.
It's not Godzilla versus Gigan.
Yeah.
Give it like three sequels, and we'll be back to the little victory dance.
The flying.
And the flying and the animated sequences and...
Just don't bring back Kazuki.
We heard a drop kick.
All right. In the back. In the ridge. Yeah, you.
One of the things I found a little disturbing, and in general, a lot of films right now, is they don't seem to understand in movies how atomic weapons actually work. How modern thermonuclear weapons actually function. Mm-hmm. You can't be 5 miles away from it and survive it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure everybody in San Francisco would have been melted at the end of that movie.
They noticed that everybody understood that the Mutos could create EMP, but everybody seemed to forget that atomic weapons create EMP. So the helicopter didn't fall out of the sky. I mean,
maybe it was a Genesis device. I know the city's still all evil.
There also does seem to be, just in common with all the Japanese ones too, there's a lot of hand-waving as far as the science is concerned, right? I mean, if you even think about the oxygen destroyer, I mean, if you destroy all the oxygen in water, shouldn't Tokyo Bay have turned into a giant cloud of hydrogen, which then...
Nobody let a match.
Yeah. But the... and I think the... You know, the way a lot of these things seem to work to me in these films is that it's primarily operating at a symbolic level. And so the, you know, whether it, does it make, rational sense? No. But then you've got two giant monsters that violate every law of physics, imaginable. So, if we've gone this far, why not go the whole hog? And I think where the films, excel is at the symbolic or the poetic level. And, I mean, this is a film that is really, I think, one of the most beautiful movies of the year. The scene on the train track, for example, is just what is really a tour de force. 1 second, every shot, one after the other, is stunning. And in absolutely surreal ways. So there's, you know, is there a way of logically explaining the spinning, flaming, flying tank? Probably not, but boy, does it look great. Or the moment we have our characters like insects being very, very quiet as the Muto goes by. Or Godzilla's first, quite literally sublime arrival in Hawaii. These are the shaky logic of these films exists to get us to that. Mm-hmm. And that if we tried to make them make perfect rational sense, then we would actually kill what these movies are best at. It would get in the way of what they should be doing.
Yeah, you have to make it easiest for the lowest common denominator, the audience member, to understand. And they kind of skip over a lot of the details because they say that's too difficult for anybody to get. So.
Well, I think there are ways to make the science correct without having it hard to be understood.
Right,
it's like making Family Fair as opposed to kids' movies.
Right.
Where,
but in a summer
you don't have to
worry about that so much. You know,
yeah, you don't necessarily... you can make a script work on different levels. It's harder to do, but you know, you can add in... You know, something that's scientifically factual and still have it work on a sense that if you really analyze it, yeah, it works in the real world, but it also works just as a simple narrative and you don't have to think too hard about it just to enjoy the movie.
It
takes more work.
Sorry. You also have to take into consideration the IQs of the authors of the script, so.
Yeah, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
But to add to an earlier point, I think that what this movie does exceptionally well is show scale.
Yeah.
Just the
and I
can't recall a movie that does it quite as well. Even Pacific Rim, you know, it almost looks like they're trying to hide some of their special effects with all that rain. But the fact that you have this magnificent movie about you get the scale of these monsters. I mean, just even from that shot you see in the trailer where they shoot the flares off the building and then you see the skin of Godzilla kind of just emerge in the light. It's, oh, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. I love it. I love it. So, anyway. Yes, with the hair.
Yeah, I think the EMP also helps with, like, establishing that sense of scale because it kind of takes out permission a lot of the U.S. military's bigger toys. It pretty much puts us down to the scale of monkeys with sticks against the almighty force of Godzilla.
That would be a good movie. Yeah.
Godzilla on the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Isn't that coming out next month?
No, seriously, they're going to remake 2001.
Yeah, I think you're right there. That serves as a really useful function to reinforce Sarazawa's position in the film, where he basically says, like, this is just nature, you all need to just stop chasing Godzilla and let him do his thing. And of course, to do that, like, you literally have to neuter us. We have to be shut down completely to a point where we are resorting to, like, you know, lighting eggs on fire using gasoline, right? Like, that's the extent to which, like, they're not going to do that to the Muto, right? The Muto's just going to eat them or stomp on them or whatever they do for fun. So I think that serves to really, really enhance the, not only the scale, but to just sort of remind us that this is Godzilla's movie, and it is up to him. He's the one that actually has to save us, of course. That's not his goal. We don't know what the hell Godzilla wants. He's just doing whatever he wants. But it is a really interesting part of it, I think. So.
He's giving the title by being a monster instead of everything else. No competition.
Enjoy.
The only thing I can't get is that he could beat giant spiders. He could beat two giant ants. He could even beat a giant lobster, but he can't beat a boss.
But depending on the film, he toasts Mothra quite effectively several times.
Don't diss Mothra. Actually, just a quick plug. There are three Mothra movies that were made in the 1990s, and they were some of the craziest filmmaking you'll ever see, and I love them so much. Anyway, in front of me.
I have two things. Number one, I felt that Godzilla was, like, wasn't as powerful as he was in, like, the movies, but he kept getting butt-whooped a lot. He wasn't, like, very, very happy that he basically demolished the Mutos. And I also felt that this movie had more damage control than Man of Steel.
Yeah, more damage control than Man of Steel, I agree with that, it is. In the brown, in the center there. Yes, you.
It seemed like it was a little bit Americanized, where it looked like Godzilla would have lost if it wasn't for the intervention of the Mutos. Because he was at almost like KO point, they're saying that he was doing really well. And then all of a sudden, the Mutos got distracted, ran back, and Godzilla got second win.
That is a pattern that we see in a lot of the Japanese films too, where the humans don't necessarily have zero agency; they have a supporting role to play, and that's, you know, part of the arc. Not only in the Godzilla films, of course, in almost any sort of hero narrative, right, where the hero is going to be taken down, you know, pretty much out, and then rise up to smite the enemies with all, you know, the wrath of God.
Every wrestling match ever fought.
Yeah. And Godzilla gets close to the KO point in film after film after film after film, and then at the end, you know, he brings the wrath, it was a pretty familiar pattern that was playing out there,
except
at least
for
to me. Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, there are other ones where he loses or it's a tie or draw, right? So yeah, King Kong or Godzilla versus Mothra, you know, kills the first Mothra, but then taken out by the caterpillars, right? So. We get that pattern that we saw in this one too.
Ed,
as more, how many people started going when Godzilla's spine started?
That was a great shot.
I just about beat my boyfriend to death because I'm like.
I love how, like, at first you don't even really realize what's happening. You just see something light up, and, like, then you see it start trailing up, like, oh.
in the pink hat.
It seemed like Godzilla was less of a guardian or the hero, and more or less he was just killing the bad guys. He seemed less like the savior and more like a grumpy bouncer.
I think
the facial animations, he looked PO'd all the time. Earth's grumpy grandpa taking care of the grumpy.
Yeah, I think he's...
Even Ludo doesn't have the right ideas with him.
To put it in gaming terms, I think he's chaotic neutral.
To be fair to Godzilla, he did spend like 50 years taking a really good nap. And then everything got, just went, you know, he's grumpy. Getting him a break.
He woke up.
Right.
Hey, Ludo's, get off my lawn.
Oh, goodness.
The only real problem I had with this one was, at the end of it, we as an audience are going to root for Godzilla, unless he's a jerk to us. But at the end, you think he's dead for a little bit, and then he gets up. And, like, we're seeing news, like, on the big screen at the stadium, Godzilla, savior of New York, whatever. I'm like, didn't he just wreck half the town? Are we really just going to... I mean, like, yeah, as fans, we're going to, like, yeah, let him go. But as the U.S. military, we're really going to let this... red flag, walk back into the scene, forget about him?
Well, there was a question mark on the end of the news byline. King of the Monsters? See, in the
Yeah. One of the things I think that Godzilla movie doesn't get that movies like Cloverfield and Pacific Rim do is the ecology of what it means to have a giant monster around all the time. I mean, Godzilla just walks off in the sea at the end of this movie, but in Cloverfield we get the little, parasites infesting the subways, and Pacific Rim, they fully adapted their entire society to that, to dealing with these kaiju, but Godzilla is just like, it's here, it does stuff, and they just let it go. It just feels like we're going to go back to status quo.
In a way, that's really true of the Japanese movies, because it's like literally they reset after just about every single one.
They're too busy rebuilding.
Wait, wasn't Godzilla just here? Why are you guys surprised? There have been 30 of these films.
Oh, no, not again.
There's only a couple of films where they pick up the second Godzilla film. They I think they fight it's in a different city because Tokyo is still wrecked.
Yeah.
And Godzilla vs. Biollante, they're still repairing Tokyo from the previous film. Mm-hmm. But yeah, otherwise it's like a sitcom where you reset. And at least, you know, Pacific Rim, I guess in this film's defense, he just showed up, right? In Pacific Rim, this is now decades after that first incident. And in Cloverfield, it's ongoing. Mm-hmm.
So we switched to Pacific Rim at this point.
If we're going to talk about going to other things, we should probably start talking Pacific Rim. So, hey, Pacific Rim.
It's awesome, and we're getting a second one in 2017. Yes.
There was talk actually of Del Toro doing Godzilla to begin with, and then. After both came out, they were talking about a crossover that, you know, Del Toro was all for. He was like, oh yeah, that sounds like great. I'd love to do it, but my schedule is not really working for it.
Yeah, with anything Del Toro does, he always has like 50 things on his slate, and I'll believe it when I actually see trailers for it, if it's going to get my eyes.
So for sort of a compare and contrast between Godzilla and Pacific Rim, where Pacific Rim was fight scenes, just straight through fight scenes over and over, how did you feel about it continually cutting away at Godzilla? Like when he comes into Hawaii, you got two monsters ready to fight, and you cut to a little kid watching TV. And then you get to, they're both in the same city, and you keep following the bomb guy around. You don't actually have a continuous fight scene until the very, very end.
Yeah, they're building up to that.
Opens with it, and then has another, and then has another, and then has three monsters and five Jaegers fighting each other, and then more. How did you kind of feel about the suspense versus action?
Personally, I really liked the way Godzilla was playing the long game, because it made the fight scenes at the end all that more exciting. I think it's that long, slow tease. I
And Pacific Rim, I think I got kind of numb to it by, I don't know,
yeah,
two-thirds of the way through.
Battle more and more epic
yeah.
as the movie goes on.
The thing it reminds me of was there was a friend who was auditioning for a musical or something, and the audition piece was singing the Star Spangled Banner. And he started, like, in the middle of his singing register, so by the time he get to the high speaky parts, he couldn't get the high notes. So, I mean, sometimes you gotta start low and then build up. And I think that's what the new Godzilla film did really well.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially if I think for myself and for many people, the best part of the fight scenes in Pacific Rim was the battle in Hong Kong. But then when we get to the actual climax underwater, it's kind of run out of steam a little bit. That's not the most exciting bit. The best bit came halfway through the movie. Whereas here, it's the build up. We keep being left wanting more. And then when, the lights light up on the tail, and you go, oh, yeah! You almost pass out with joy when those moments happen.
Well, just to add to that, to kind of go to the specific question you're asking about the switching back and forth, I think part of that has to do with the size, the scale that we've already been talking about, that Pacific Rim is about monsters and giant robots, but it's always about the people inside them. Mm-hmm. Not inside the giant monsters. That would be awkward. There are people that are making, yeah. So,
but it
always remains about the drama that concerns them. Their relationships with each other, their relationships with the people around them. Whereas Godzilla, when it goes back, I think it's kind of what David was suggesting, that it's just to remind us that they're humans are still kind of here, but they're not doing much. And when they succeed, they're in very small, maybe like they sort of like gave him an assist, right, and for his goal, but didn't do enough. And I think it may have not worked as well for me with the Godzilla movie, because I think I prefer the human drama a little bit more, but I think that's part of what's going on there, is the difference in the type of scale, that Pacific Rim is not a large-scale thing, even though it presents some of that, like there's this weird alien invasion thing, which none of us know anything about, coming in Pacific Rim 2. I'm sure they'll show up in spaceships shaped like hot dogs or something. But the scale is always fairly limited. We're only trying to stop them from coming in, whereas Godzilla is, you know, it's all about this big monster in this world, and we're all sort of ants beneath him, not capable of much. But that would be my take.
Well, I think that also underlines the fact that ultimately rather different kinds of movies. One, Godzilla is a kaiju film, and Pacific Rim, despite the fact that we have the word kaiju in there, it's a mech film, right? It's in the tradition of giant robot grandizer or Ultraman or that sort. So it's they're related, there's overlaps, but they're not the same genre exactly.
But I think what I found most interesting about Pacific Rim was the stuff that happened around the mechs and the monsters. It's the Ron Perlman character and the little details of that world that were really unique concepts to that movie. That was what excited me most.
The J.J. Abrams character?
Which one was that?
That's the scientist with the glasses who's running around trying to find a kaiju brain?
Yep.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's J.J. Abrams.
What
is the lens wear?
I love that guy, though.
I think he should have been followed around by just a lens flare, just like a ghost.
Yeah, it just goes back to that point, though, that Pacific Rim is so much about the people. Like, even these two random scientist guys, we get their entire relationship, and they have growth. They start by hating each other, kind of, and then at the end, they're like, we're best buddies now because we did something reckless. Right?
And survived,
right, yeah. So.
I think that speaks to Pacific Rim, especially versus Godzilla. There are two different types of movies. Even though they've got giant things in them, Godzilla is essentially a disaster. Mm-hmm. It could essentially be Twister if you took Godzilla and made him a tornado.
Godzilla versus Tornado.
Godzilla versus Sharknado.
Do not give sci-fi any ideas. That would be a movie.
Are you kidding? It's in production.
Speaking of movies,
you could say that's Bruce Willis versus a monster in New York. It doesn't have to be a giant monster. It's just a good guy versus a bad guy, versus an actual kaiju.
You mentioned that they didn't really establish scale too much at Pacific Rim. It was essentially just a really big Bruce Willis versus a really big
Alan Rickman.
It could have just been a background twice instead of an actual kaiju.
Speaking of Sharknado, and try not to get onto a tangent here, but the guys from Rip Tracks are going to be doing that.
Yes. And the Godzilla
98. Oh, the Godzilla.
They're doing Godzilla 98.
Oh, there's a disaster.
Just so you know, I'm blaming you when they come up with Kaijura Kane.
I pay money to see that.
Awesome.
There's a guy here doing a comic book about that, Sentience Tornado or something.
Awesome.
That's kind of cool and terrifying at the same time.
Black t-shirts.
Hunts down all the trailer parts.
Godzilla films for me were the adversary monsters. Godzilla was the background in some ways, but you know, I love King Ghidorah.
Mm-hmm.
One criticism I had of Pacific Rim and the Godzilla books was that the monsters have started to look very similar. Mm. They all have this sort of Cloverfield-esque look to them, and now it's a little early to tell with each of these movies being the first in eventually the sequels kind of thing. Where they really want to establish what Godzilla looks like, they want to establish what the robots look like. So you can't have villain too much personality. But that was something that I really would like to see in these movies, and I was wondering what your opinions are on the buff the villain match. Mm-hmm. I found them very interesting.
Yeah. It seems like this particular Godzilla would not necessarily have a foe that's a giant moth with glitter powers and twin singing carriers.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Or, anything as crazy as Biollante.
So I did think the Mutos had a nice little, there's a bit of an echo of Gigan in the... Their limbs, the non-functional yet dangerous limbs. kind of like that.
Yeah, and the Mutos, I think, their personalities are very animalistic, unlike Godzilla's, which are at times very humanistic. But that's something that I found really interesting about the Mutos, is the level of detail they went to the sounds they made and to sort of present them as these animal creatures that live in an ecosystem. But at the same time, they're deeply alien. But you might want to check out Gareth Edwards' other film. Is it Monsters?
Monsters.
Yeah.
Monsters?
From 2010. Yeah, which they're still very alien, the giant monsters in it. But their relationship with the land or their as natural creatures is very different. And there's sort of almost like a character to them.
Yeah, there's a sequel to that, too.
Yeah. That's going to be really cool. But I recommend seeing that if anyone's never seen that, it may still be on Netflix.
It is. It's on Netflix streaming right now. So
go watch it.
Netflix, go watch it. Yes.
I kind of feel opposite to that because there were two big parts for the Mutos that I actually felt emotion for them, and it's when the eggs went on fire. I felt for the Mamamoto, I could see the pain in her. And then when Daddy Mudo gave Mamamoto the bomb, and they smooched. Yeah. They literally smooched.
Quite touching.
I do understand they do have that relationship with the land, but also they a little bit higher than maybe animal. I don't know. I just felt there was an emotional connection there.
It's all about the love story, The Twilight.
Kind
of going off what he was saying, I know I've seen online a couple things for what the director and some of the producers were saying, but depending on the success of this movie, they do intend to keep going with it. One thing they said that they wanted to do was they want to license more official Toho monsters to get them in the mix.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I think pretty much essentially a trilogy has been greenlit, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And they said they kind of wanted to almost at one point do something almost like a Destroy All Monsters as a favorite.
Yes. Monster, not just like best of real.
Right.
Del Toro made a specific effort to put elements of classic kaiju into the kaiju that you should put in. He managed it through either the digital lens. The other thing is that I find it a lot easier to think about and enjoy Pacific Rim. I think the Luchador action movie. Luchadors as giant maps.
Now I'm suddenly imagining a giant luchador movie. Yeah. I'd watch
giant mecha.
Well, giant mecha luchadors.
Yes!
And you could argue there's a long tradition for that, because you go back to the original King Kong, and Willis O'Brien animated Kong doing some wrestling moves when he's fighting the T-Rex and so forth. So it's there's that connection from the start.
I felt like what you said, where it does the whole, it starts the show fight and cuts away to the conference. I felt like they did that a bit too many times, because it felt like as if I were going to a Dairy Queen for the ice cream cone, or as if I was about to eat it, the cone like falls off, so I can go back to another one. It happens too many times. That's how I felt, and then when I finally got to watch the last 10 minutes, I felt like it wasn't quite worth seeing for the rest of the movie more, because in the end, I felt like the humans were just everyday humans that we've seen in almost every other military movie.
Well, that actually speaks to the difference in the two universes between the Godzilla movie and Pacific Rim, because in the Godzilla movie, Godzilla is the worst thing to happen to Earth ever since human beings figured out how to like tie a stick to a rock and make it cool. You know, it's like the biggest disaster that's ever happened. But at this point, the kaiju, they're like snow emergencies in this town. But people, you know, it's like people are still just going on about the business. Like, okay, yeah, giant robots punching a monster. How much can I talk to you? It's a totally different universe, because this has been an ongoing thing where they're basically a dangerous nuisance, where there's things in place to deal with it, whereas with Godzilla, it's like, okay, we're home.
Well, they didn't do that actually in Godzilla, because there was that one building that did not evacuate, or all one about their jobs, while Godzilla was right outside the window. So. They had a deadline, damn it.
Roland Emmerich directed that building.
I think it's super interesting that one of the things we talk about with Pacific Rim is the characters and how the characters are built and the difference between that and Godzilla. But when you think about like the characters we saw in that movie, they are very much caricatures. The Russians are very Russians. Their mech is super Russian. It's a big giant metal thing.
It's a legitimate moving
nuclear all the Chinese guys. It's the clones of Yao Ming. I mean, if we're going to be honest here, like a lot of the characters in that movie are characters. It's interesting how, despite that, we praise that movie for its development. So I don't know if that's just us not noticing it, or if actually it is a really good development.
Well, I think it's a symptom of how bland most action movie characters are, you know, including Godzilla. You know, how bland is that leading character? It's so bland. I didn't even realize that the guy was the same actor from Kick-Ass. It's like, he's just a tabula rasa.
I missed that, too. I totally missed that was the guy until someone said something later.
I know,
and I was like, really? What happened?
Seriously?
I mean, if you see Savages, you can't tell that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a chameleon, and then fades back into the background. That's the character.
And it was one of the weird things, because I think most people who didn't look up a lot about the movie, they came into it thinking Bryan Cranston was going to be the main guy. And then, I'm sorry, who's not seen the movie yet?
I don't care, though.
Okay. Well, just so you know, I'm going to ruin the whole movie for you, so whatever. Yeah, he's not the main character. Despite the fact he is the only human character, I think, in the entire film who has real emotional issues that he tries painfully badly to deal with. But then it switched to his son, and it's like, but the son is really dull. Like, the only interesting thing about him is that he defuses bombs, but we don't even get to see him do that. Like, he touches a bomb once, right? And that's about it.
It seems to me like the script was written with this ongoing theme of parents and kids, because you've got the Bryan Cranston and his son, and you've got the son trying to protect his own family, and then, you know, he picks up a stray Asian child at some point, and you know, and of course the Mutos are parents, and
true.
So I think there's this ongoing theme that the script was so slavishly trying to hold on to that they forgot to make parts of it interesting. So, you know, once Bryan Cranston is out, it forgets to do anything really interesting with his son.
There's also a little extra diegetic clue that Bryan Cranston is not going to have a big role in the film, because mm-hmm. if you look on the poster, it's, you know, Aaron Taylor Young and so-and-so, and Bryan Cranston. So
yeah.
As soon as any cast says "and big star name," that big star name is going to get killed partway through or only have a cameo,
yeah.
Guaranteed.
Black t-shirt. with the red on it, yes.
You were touching on the family thing. Did you notice in Pacific Rim that, like, it was a big family team in with, like, the Idris Elba character with the daughter, mm-hmm. or the well, main character's brother,
mm-hmm.
and the husband and wife?
That's true.
Did you guys see that?
Yeah, there were a lot of interrelationship things going in the Pacific Rim script as well.
Yeah.
Great turn.
With all the movies coming out, like, and I know somebody's gonna laugh when I say this, they're doing a reboot. What are your feelings on crossovers? Because if the first reboot does good, I know it'll never happen, but I'd like to see a crossover between Godzilla and Power Rangers.
That would be beautiful.
Oh, guys.
I didn't want to
see that.
Godzilla versus Dragon.
Yes!
Actually, could we go back to a second? He'd raised that question about the representation of different groups in Pacific Rim, which I think is a really interesting point we didn't really touch on.
Yeah, very interesting, yes.
I'll say a quick thing and you guys can jump in. I think one of the things that maybe we don't, like, there have been some criticism of the way in which the various nationalities are caricatured, but I think part of what people loved about Pacific Rim was that it is a multinational, multiracial group of people. I mean, even by after their little organization sort of gets shut down for funding issues, they sort of, like, move camp and they just become this hodgepodge of all these different nationalities working in one place, and, like, hopefully in Pacific Rim 2 we get to see more of these other nationalities being represented, and we get to see more about who they are. I don't know if that's true. It would be cool, right? She thinks that would be cool. But it is, I think that's great, because of course the main character is an American dude, but then we have this secondary character, who is a Japanese woman who is raised by a British man. After being rescued, et cetera, et cetera. So there's this mixture of all of this stuff, which we very rarely actually get in action movies. Even when we have, like, even in Godzilla, it starts in Japan, and yet all of our quote unquote heroes are American dudes, and the one Japanese guy, Serizawa, played by Ken Watanabe, who is totally wasted in this, he mostly sort of just offers kind of folksy wisdom once in a while.
Yeah,
which
he kind of stares up in awe a little bit.
Now, when they do Godzilla 2, I hope he gets more.
Oh,
I really do.
Yeah.
I really hope they put him up there and they give him, like, some real good, like, lines to chew on.
Yeah, with Pacific Rim, I think their characterizations were pretty clumsy, but at least they were making an effort, right? I mean, one of my big things in modern American movies is I'm always very frustrated about roles for women, and I'm very frustrated by roles for minority actors and actresses, and they're, by and large, I mean, all of our leading characters are white men, and over just the last couple of years we've started to see a lot more attention paid towards minority characters and female characters, and, like, because I think the conventional wisdom that there has to be a white male action star is starting to break down. And last year of the six highest grossing films in the American market, three of them were led by women. You had Gravity, you had Frozen, and you had Hunger Games, and which is fantastic. So I think we're seeing progress on that front. So I'm all for what Pacific Rim was doing, and I hope there's more, because yeah. the more we have scripts that make an effort to have a multiracial cast or a cast that includes a lot of women, we're going to get better at using characters like that.
Yeah.
And I certainly agree that in Godzilla as far as the roles for the women are concerned was probably the film's single biggest flaw.
Oh, God.
As far as
I did like
the deconstruction of the white male character.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
That I think as opposed to the sort of providing agency that we got in Pacific Rim, we got, here's the stereotypical character, now we'll just take it apart all the way through the film.
Mm-hmm.
But, sorry.
I think that that's a great point. But, you know, you have his wife, who is a doctor and who is clearly intelligent. Why didn't she have more to do?
Yeah,
she could have easily been given more to do.
Yeah.
Rather than just being relegated to looking up and screaming a lot.
Yeah, she didn't have an arc of even if all the characters' arcs are arcs of futility, she wasn't even given that.
Right, yeah. Right.
Did you want to offer anything?
So as far as I understand this, if there's in Pacific Rim, you know, speculating here, if there's going to be more Jaegers from international countries, the Jaeger from America is going to be run by the military, and they won't be able to make it work.
Maybe.
That's what I'm taking home with me.
I want to see what the Canadian Jaeger looks like.
Ours is going to be awesome.
Ours was apparently the first.
They don't have an axe.
It's a cold onion.
Oh, we got a new Jaeger.
All right, we're just about at time. Closing thoughts? Maybe.
I've said too much already.
Oh.
Hardly.
Which one's better?
I feel like it's a way to get punched later.
How about this? How about we each make a suggestion for a kaiju movie that the audience might not have seen?
Well, I'll get mine because I already said it. It's Monsters, which is by the same guy who directed Godzilla. Really, if you've not seen it, go see it. It's a very different kind of giant monster kaiju film, but it's good. It does a lot of really interesting things, so I recommend that.
Okay.
Do you want to recommend?
Yeah. 20 Million Miles to Earth.
Ooh.
I know it's out there. It's probably on cable all the time. But if you haven't watched it recently, watch it again and keep the kaiju element in mind.
The mid-90s Gamera trilogy.
Because
any trilogy that establishes a 200-foot jet-propelled flying fire-breathing turtle as a Christ figure is doing something really interesting.
The Mothra trilogy, so I am going to go ahead and mention Godzilla, Mothra, King Ghidorah, Giant Monsters, All Out Attack, because it is by far the most interesting Japanese Godzilla movie that's come out in the last 15, 20 years.
By the director of the Gamera trilogy.
By the director of the Gamera trilogy. Yeah, it involves Godzilla as the embodiment of all the people who suffered at Japanese hands during World War II, and other monsters smacking him down. So, you know,
Ghidorah is the good guy.
And we're at time.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.